Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What is going on, Bills Mafia? It is your host, AJ Cebulski, with another edition of AJ's Analysis. I am joined today by Matt Perino. Matt hosts the Shout Buffalo Bills podcast over on YouTube and many audio platforms. He's a Bills beat reporter for Syracuse.com, and you can find him on X at Matt Perino. Check him out on Buffalo Kickoff Live on Channel 4 on game days. Good friend of mine. Matt, how are you doing today?
Good, buddy. How are you doing?
Good. I'm ready to break down some Bills versus Cowboys. The Bills were able to get a big victory on the legs of James Cook, 31-10. Let's start there, Matt. AFC Offensive Player of the Week, 25 carries, 179 yards, one touchdown. And then in the air, two receptions for 42 yards and a touchdown. 221 total yards and two total touchdowns from James Cook in this one. Just the thought on his performance and what it means for the Bills down the stretch here.
Yeah, like I think we've been kind of building to this with James. He's had a really good last month, even with a couple of mistakes baked in, right? The fumble a couple weeks ago on the first offensive play of the game. Can't remember who they were playing. And then he had a big drop, which would have been a touchdown, I believe, in the Eagles game. And I think through that, you've seen this level of confidence emerge from James Cook through some of those shortcomings, and he is just playing at a level that we've haven't seen a running back play at maybe since Fred Jackson with the Bills over a decade ago, but certainly looking very much like Thurman Thomas. I went back and because Thurman Thomas, people don't remember, especially younger Bills fans, how elite of a pass catcher he was. And to me, that's what separates James Cook and kind of puts him into that Christian McCaffrey range. Now, obviously, he's not Christian McCaffrey yet. He's a very young player. But what he can do on the field and what he means to your offense, I feel like we're starting to see what Brandon Bean envisioned when they drafted him. And I think the biggest takeaway for me from that game was just the dominance up front by this Bills offensive line. You know, they're playing, 900 some odd snaps together this season. That is very rare in this league. And I think you're starting to see the fruits of that, like the continuity that's been built up playing together. I think Spencer Brown is having an absolutely tremendous season. You know, you look at just the overall offensive run blocking grades. If you go over to look at Pro Football Focus, and Spencer Brown comes out of that game with a 92.9 run block grade, which is, you know, you think about where he was a year ago and he's in a completely different place in his career and, you know, slowly getting into the conversation among like really good tackles in the NFL, which, you know, it's one season and you want to put everything in its proper perspective. But, you know, if they're going to run block the way that they did against the Cowboys, I think it changes the dynamic of the offense.
Yeah, that was exactly where I was going to get to next, this offensive line. And by the way, James Cook, you know, I think I have the question written down here. Is he becoming elite? I'll just answer that myself. I think he's on the brink. I think the scheme allows him to be utilized more. Obviously, Ken Dorsey had some trouble getting him involved consistently. I think Joe Brady's done a good job week in, week out to kind of stick with him and get him involved. He's also running routes that you don't really see many running backs. Now, I will say, like, that touchdown, yeah, it was a simple play. Gabe Davis cleared out on a post route and he got the front pylon. But that's a play like using his hand, snatching the ball off the ground like that with the ball kind of like going down towards the turf. That's a catch that, you know, a lot of receivers would say that's a pretty good catch. So James Cook, like you said, Matt, can do it in the air and on the ground. Let's get to this offensive line. Deion Dawkins, Connor McGovern, Mitch Morse, Osiris Torrance, and Spencer Brown. Not to get ahead of ourselves here, but this offensive line will probably be injury you know, if they don't suffer any injuries, this offensive line might be back next year at the same exact unit. So there will be some continuity there. Best pass blocking unit in the NFL, according to Computer Cowboy. Give them a follow over at Ben B. Baldwin. They've been there all year. Like, I thought it was the first 2 weeks, I thought, well, why are they, you know, I didn't really think that they were going to stay there all year. They're still there, and it's pretty incredible. Josh Allen in this presser this week mentioned Deion Dawkins and his approach this year and how he's kind of taken a different approach now that he's way into his career, which is kind of hard to do. Is Deion Dawkins, for you, Matt, having the best his best season as a Bill, like Josh, you know, kind of reiterated this week at the press conference?
Without a doubt, and that's what made last season so...
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Hard to understand, because I felt like in 2021, that last 10 games, like, remember Deion dealt with COVID that year multiple times. And so, you know, he was fighting through that the first part of the season. But as they got to like the Tampa Bay game, I felt that he went into a kind of a zone that was probably the best football that he's played in his career. And we didn't see any of that last season. And the more I've kind of dug into this thing, you know, it's been a adjustment to the techniques that Aaron Kromer teaches, the Bills offensive line coach. And so Roger Saffold, I remember having a conversation with him at the end of last year, and he's like, wait till you see this unit next year. You're like, year two of Kromer changes everything, because everybody has an offseason to really study what they did on tape technique-wise, make adjustments, and then come into camp and really double down on everything that they learn in year one with Kromer. And, you know, he was like an oracle. I mean, this has been, I mean, there's been Osiris Torrance, who's new to the scheme. And I think Connor McGovern, is his success is really interesting, because this is his first year with Kromer, just like Torrance. And I think those two guys, for the most part, have been really reliable. But I think it helps to have the other three guys that played in the scheme last year that can kind of help solidify things. And I asked Spencer Brown after the Cowboys game about Kromer, and he said, man, he's the best offensive line coach I've ever had from a technique perspective. The way that he teaches, the way that he invites you into the process, like, he just had rave reviews for what Kromer has meant to this team. And, you know, Deion Dawkins, to me, he's looked this whole season, he's only allowed one sack all year, like the guy that we saw at the end of 2021. And I think he just needed a little time to adjust to a new scheme and a new way of doing things. He's the 22nd highest graded tackle in football. And to me, that's about where he belongs, like in that like Pro Bowl kind of conversation. And he's having a really solid season.
Yeah. I don't think he'll ever be an upper echelon guy, but this year, Matt, I agree. He has had a lot of success in both the pass blocking and run blocking game. Obviously the pancake that Kyle Brandt, everyone's talking about, he got the scepter. Him and James got the scepter from Kyle Brandt this week. So another just dominating.
One thing to double down on that though. Like, if you take a look at tackles in the league with 500 snaps or more, Dawkins kind of pops up to 17. So if you think about that and you extrapolate all the left tackles out of that group, you know, he's in a group of probably 7 or 8 left tackles, among the best in the NFL. And that's what, to me, he was at the end of 21. So I think that's massive. And his health, sneaky. Like, I think there's a lot of guys on the Bills offensive line that are important, But Dawkins' health is as important as anybody's. And he's been an Iron Man for the Bills since they drafted him. He has not missed much time. That is a luxury that a lot of teams don't have. I mean, look around the league. You know, I remember last year, Slater from LA, he goes out, misses the entire season. Lane Johnson had a year a couple years ago where he was banged up. You know, Deion Dawkins has played through so much over his career. I mean, you can't say enough about that, because if you lose him, that changes the entire dynamic of this thing, because now you're looking at maybe Ryan Vandermark at that spot, and the drop-off there, as good as Vandermark looked in training camp and preseason, is vast.
Yeah, even like a Teron Armstead, you see what the Dolphins have been without him. They have struggled, and his health has been critical. And like you said, Matt, Deion has been a guy that has been consistently healthy, and there have been a lot of fans, or some fans, I should say, not a lot, some fans that have critiqued him in training camp and how prepared he is. And to come out and, you know, in the sixth, seventh year of your career, playing your best football, I think that shows a lot about what he does to prepare and his ability to continue to succeed. I want to move to the snap counts for this game, and I want to look at three position groups specifically, just because this is an astonishing kind of thing for me, looking at the game in this Bills-Cowboys matchup. I'm going to start with the wide receiver room. Gabe Davis led the wide receiver room with 49 snaps, 72% of the snap share. Trent Sherfield comes in at 39 snaps at a 57% snap share, his highest all season. Khalil Shakir, 33 snaps at 49% snap share. Stephon Diggs, 31 snaps, 46% snap share. So he's less than 50% snaps, Stephon Diggs. And then Deontay Hardy, only 2 snaps, 3%. So what do you make of this snap share, Matt? Like, is this kind of just like, we're going to run the ball down your throat, and Stephon Diggs, we don't really need you as much, and Deontay Hardy, you're kind of just solidified as this punt return guy, gadget guy that can come on for a few snaps a week, and that's kind of this kind of role that's happening with Brady?
A little bit, and I think that, like, Hardy's kind of like a break glass in case of emergency type of guy. Like, you know, if game's not going well, like, we've seen it this season. There's been 2 games where the Bills needed a big play and they threw a curveball at a defense. And even, I think it was the Chiefs game. It was a 3rd and long. And Deontay Hardy comes up with that huge catch on the crosser across the middle. Like, you know, he's not a part of the, you know, consistently a part of their offense, but I like that in their back pocket for when they need it. I think Davis and Sherfield, when they're out on the field together in 12 personnel with Hart or Kincaid and Dawson Knox, I feel like that's their best run look. And I think if you go back to training camp, like, you could do so many things with that, because Sherfield can motion, Gabe Davis can motion. They're both great blockers. They can both be used in the pass game out of those sets. And then you also have Kincaid and Knox. I feel like it puts the defense in a bind a little bit to try to figure out what to do. You could really start setting up some play action out of that look later in the season. So I think you're going to see more Sherfield as the season goes along. And I think it's interesting. This is the first game since week 4 against the Dolphins that Gabe Davis played less than 80% of the snaps. So I think that's a confidence level in Sherfield, and you know, when he was on the field even when Davis wasn't out there. I think that's a piece of it. And then the Diggs piece, I think they were just running it so much. Why put him out there and have him grind through that? The Gabe Davis conversation this offseason is going to be so interesting. I mean, you look at his season, 200-yard games, another game at 90, another game at 87, and then you got a couple offers. I mean, the Jets, he didn't have a catch. Kansas City, Dallas didn't have a catch. I mean, crazy development here. And you could sense the frustration with Davis. I mean, he was the first out of the locker room on Sunday. Probably not thrilled about that. Now they're winning and their offense is kind of coming together. But we'll see how this looks at the end of the season. Shakir, I think that he's going to be a matchup driven play. Like, you know, you're going to utilize him more in games where you feel like you can put a team secondary in a bad spot out of the slot. And he kind of comes up when you forget about him, right? Like, I remember in the playoff game last year against the Bengals, he probably had one of the biggest offensive plays of that game that set them up in the red zone for that touchdown. So I think it's going to fluctuate. It's going to be game plan specific. And I don't think Joe Brady's afraid to shake things up from a personnel standpoint. He's proven that over the last 4 games.
Yeah, Joe Brady's done a great job. And with the Gabe Davis conversation, like you said, Matt, it's going to be interesting because I for one thought that if Gabe was going to get extended, it was going to be before the season. Now they're at the point where, like, has he had a good enough season to get the money he wants elsewhere? Is he a guy that's going to – like, Alan Lazard comes to mind for me last year. I know he's having a terrible year with the Jets, and that's kind of the whole Aaron Rodgers thing is just – I can't it's just unbelievable, the story. But he's just – he got – Alan Lazard got $11 million from the Jets. So is that, like, Gabe Davis territory for you? Are you looking at, like, a $10 to $12 million contract for him? No, you think less. No.
Yeah, Lazard got that because he gets a Christmas card from Aaron Rodgers every year. So he took care of his buddies and whatever. I mean, get what you can get. I don't think Davis is in that realm. I think he's been a little bit too inconsistent. And really, if we're talking about Davis, we're talking about one game that I feel like puts the ceiling on his potential that he's never really been able to kind of live up to consistently. He's had some big games. Like, he was really good in that Steelers game last year. Remember that unbelievable catch against Minka Fitzpatrick down the seam. But I just think that he's going to probably land somewhere in the $6 to $9 million range. It could be in Buffalo. I do think that they have to prioritize the position in the draft, high in the draft, because Stephon Diggs is on the wrong side of 32. I mean, you got to start really replenishing the cupboard for Josh Allen, get some rookie contracts in here. I mean, I know Brandon Bean says you don't want to get Ja'Marr Chase because you don't want to be high enough to draft that guy. But, you know, you can get a Ja'Marr Chase like esque player late in the first round, sometimes in the second round. I mean, A.J. Brown was a second round draft pick. DK Metcalf, second round draft pick. They got to get a dude in the draft this year. So I'd imagine that the scouting group has been hard at work trying to figure out who are the dudes in this draft, who are the Bills going to be in range to kind of go after. And then really prioritize that position in the draft. And if that means not bringing back Gabe, I mean, it's interesting too. Like, you might have to consider he was a captain this year. He's been the number two the last 2 years. How is he going to fit into the picture with a brand new high-end wide receiver that you draft, Diggs, who demands all this, all these throws, and then Dalton Kincaid, who is only going to probably take another step up next year. There's just so many balls to go around in this offense. So, I think the numbers would have to be right on the Bills side to consider bringing him back, but it's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, and Shakir and James Cook and Dawson Knox. So, like you said, there's a lot of mouths to feed on this offense. I went with Josh Allen's performance in this one, 7 of 15, 94 yards and 2 touchdowns, 0 turnovers. So he ends his 9-game interception streak. At the end of the game, or once Kyle Allen went in the fourth quarter, I looked this up because I was just curious. This is the first time he hasn't gone over the 100-yard mark since his rookie year, in a games where he's at least had 15 attempts. He made a few nice throws throughout the game. I thought, like he does, like I said, he does enough to get the job done in this one. Kind of a complimentary piece to James Cook. The question for you is this closer to the Josh Allen you want to see? But do you want to see less reliant on Josh Allen? And do you think that means that's better for the Bills moving forward?
No, I think that I'm fine with the version of Josh Allen that's played in most games this season. Like, I think that, you know, what people need to do around him is step up and make plays. And when guys make plays in the offense, I feel like it ends up skewing towards what we saw on Sunday, where he maybe not doesn't feel like he needs to do as much. But there are some games where he needs to do that as much. He needs to do everything that he's kind of been criticized for, to try to put the Bills in a situation to win a game. I mean, if he doesn't play the way that he does against the Eagles, they're not even in that game with the way that the defense kind of struggled in the second half. So, no, I think it's a game-to-game situation. I think you want Josh Allen to be himself. And, you know, I think Joe Brady has a really good feel coming right from the quarterback room with him the last year and a half of how to put him in a spot to be successful. And, you know, man, is he – he's like the biggest cheerleader for Allen. And I think that that's good. Like, I think that reinforces him all the time. I think that's the kind of dynamic he had with Dable a couple years ago. Not that he didn't have it with Dorsey, but it's fresh. It's new. They're having a lot of success in this. So I don't know. I'm never going to get in the space of asking Josh Allen to change who he is. I think they went a little bit too hard on that in the offseason with don't run, don't run, don't run. He's got to run a little bit. He's got to be at least allowed to operate like Josh Allen operates. Otherwise, he's not Josh Allen anymore. So I'm fine with either version.
And even in a game, Matt, where he only had 15 pass attempts, it's still, when he did have the opportunity to make a play, he still used his legs. He was still carrying tacklers, doing Josh Allen things. Now, final question before I have a couple things to flip to on the defensive side of the ball.
Listen, I'm going to break in here and just say, we got to figure this out with the ring light in the sun, in the glasses. I can't see your eyes. Are you looking at me? You making eye contact?
That's why it's audio. That's why it's audio.
This is going to be on video?
And when I turn on this lamp, it's all like,
Oh yeah, you're popping, dude. This got to be your new profile picture.
I saw the one
like three eyes there. Like I'm like,
I saw the one that your father-in-law took of me, and I probably won't change that. It was a good professional photo. So
nice.
All right, one more question for the offensive side of the ball: does Joe Brady deserve to get the interim tag removed?
Yes, we talked about this a bit on our show, and I think the challenge to that is there's probably going to be a negotiation involved there. Like, you know, he's come in and the results have been unbelievable. So I'm sure that Brady wants to probably come to the table and figure out what his deal is going to look like. And he's probably on a 2-year deal, I would imagine, as the QB coach. So he's under contract through this season. So I think that that kind of muddles things up a little bit. But in terms of like the future for this offense, like I don't think that Sean McDermott is considering a different approach. He's got a good relationship with Brady. There's a reason he went to him when he did. So I think it's only a matter of time. But, yeah, I think calling him the interim OC is kind of disingenuous at this point. Like, I think they're all in on Brady.
Yeah, I agree. All right, defensive side of the ball. Two things. I'm just going to combine them. Teron Johnson held CeeDee Lamb. I'm not saying – That he was against him in every situation. I also think Lamb got some receptions in garbage time. 7 catches for 53 yards. And then also, I want to have the conversation about Sean McDermott. I criticized him. I think a lot of people criticized him throughout this season. He comes in at 6-6, coming off a bye week with all the distractions, the article, the Von Miller stuff that went down. Aaron Schatz, DVOA, is an analytic advanced metric. Weeks 1-5, they were the 6th overall defense. Then when Matt Milano and Daquan Jones went down, week 6-10, they were the 32nd ranked defense. So they went from 6th to 32nd. But now from weeks 11 to 15, they're the 5th overall ranked DVOA defense from that week, from weeks 11 to 15. And now they are the 10th overall defensive team in DVOA. So when you look at it, when Milano and Jones went down, the defense really struggled. Now it looks like they've kind of found an identity. Terrell Dodson's been coming really into his own here. A lot of people wrote McDermott off. A lot of people thought that he was going to be the guy that was going to be considered to be moved at the end of the season. I think a lot of people thought the Bills would be at a 7-7, 6-8 situation right now coming out of the bye week just because of the fact that it just didn't look good and they weren't able to find any identity. So I just want to say, like, Sean McDermott, I think, has earned himself at least another season. I think that with all the stuff about him that came out and all the distractions and stuff like that, I think he's done a really good job.
Yeah, and so no matter how low things got there in the struggles, I was never advocating for him to be fired. Like, yeah. I think sometimes we get a little hyperbolic in the way that we look at things in a Super Bowl window and in a season with expectations like this. I've been ultra critical of Sean at times. Like, there's been moments in games where just it's been head-scratching. Like, you know, he's got to wear that Denver Broncos loss. Like, that was on him. His defense has to wear that New England Patriots loss. And we're not in talking about this situation that the Bills are in right now, if not for those two games. So he's got to wear that. But those numbers that you just rattled off, I mean, really think about that. The entire complexion of their defense changed after 5 games. I mean, to lose Milano and Daquan Jones, who were arguably the two most vital pieces of their defense, to have to reinvent themselves, to have to figure it out on the fly, the trade for Rasul Douglas, who I think Brandon Bean should get some credit for that, huge. In a trade that, as we've found out, the Green Bay Packers didn't want to make, and they're in a playoff run. Brandon Bean took Rasul Douglas off of the Green Bay Packers' hands in the middle, because at the time they thought that they probably weren't going to be in the playoff mix, but they've won enough games, and they're probably sitting there in the locker room right now and like, that was a heist. How do we lose one of our top cornerbacks opposite of Jaire Alexander? So I think that's a huge part of it too. But McDermott is, you know, these last two games with their season on the brink, with all the pressure to go on the road and beat the defending Super Bowl champions in a tight game like that, a one score game, when you weren't winning one score game for a while, that was a huge moment. And then to come back, everybody thought the Cowboys were going to come into Orchard Park and steamroll that Bills defense, and they shut them down. I mean, if they make the playoffs, if they win the AFC East, which I predicted before.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
For the Chiefs game. We're talking about Sean McDermott maybe being the coach of the year in the NFL. Like, can you talk about an unbelievable swing from where things were at with the narrative on him 3 weeks ago to what it could be after week 18? It's really a wild ride. And listen, I don't – unless there's organizational breakdown where you start to get some of the internal messaging being some of the stuff that we read in the Ty Dunn article – I really don't see the end in sight for McDermott's run unless there is another huge calamity of a postseason meltdown of a game. Like, he's gone to the playoffs 5 of 6 years. It seems like they're on track to go 6 of 7. You know, where they end up will definitely be part of the conversation. But I don't know if Terry Pegula is at the point. You know, you see him in that one video when Brandon Bean gave McDermott the game ball and Pegula in the background smiling. I mean, they're really close. And Sean McDermott's changed what this organization helped change it from what it was before he got here. And I think Terry probably has a little apprehension about trying to find that again. And I think that there's also something in this world. I know there's a lot of examples, you know, the Marvin Lewis's, the Marty Schottenheimers, guys that get to big spots in the playoffs and never can get over the hump. There's, of course, those examples. But I don't think any of them ever had a Josh Allen, right? Like an elite, top of the pack, arguably the greatest quarterback in the league at that time, or if not the greatest, that 1B, right? Like Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. You were always talking about it. For a long time, Peyton Manning was on, you know, a path to never winning a Super Bowl before he did. So I think that he's got at least a 2-year window, probably this year and next year, to figure it out. And then the conversation changes. And I know it's hard because you have to think about, okay, you have Josh Allen in this window of his prime. And if it's not going to be McDermott, you got to find the guy, but it could also go a completely different direction too. And I know you don't want to operate in that space. It's really complicated. I think that's a long way of saying that this is a really complicated situation to manage for Terry Pegula. And, you know, we've seen what's happened on the hockey side of things. We saw what happened on the football side of things before McDermott. It's challenging.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you. I was hypercritical of Sean McDermott for sure. I know you had to be at the 12 men on the field debacle and stuff like that, and the Mac Jones drive and all that stuff. But yeah, like you said, Matt, to go on the road and hold the Chiefs and Cowboys to a combined 27 points. The Cowboys were the highest scoring offense in the league. The Chiefs have taken a step back, but what an impressive response from him, the defense, and just the whole team in general. It's pretty astonishing that they were able to do this. One more note, Leonard Floyd gets to 10-plus sacks this year, first dude since Lorenzo Alexander. Ed Oliver continues to make big plays, and Greg Rousseau continues to be elite in the run game and does a lot of things that go unnoticed besides the sack numbers. Let's move to the Bills injury update. Daquan Jones, 21-day window opened. Obviously huge for the Bills if they can get him back. Micah Hyde and AJ Epenesa, limited in back-to-back days. Any other injury updates, Matt, as we look here and kind of shift our conversation towards the Chargers?
Yeah, I think Ty Johnson's one to watch with the red jersey. I know there's been a lot of people clamoring for Leonard Fournette. And so, I mean, this could be now the first week we get a chance to see him. I mean, he's been chomping at the bit to get some action. So if they want to take it easy on Ty Johnson, who did come back in the game on Sunday with the shoulder injury, but he's been non-contact all week. I think that's something that that I'm watching out for, and see if maybe this is the first game that Fournette gets elevated and gets to play a little bit.
Let's move to the playoff chances real quick before we get into Bills Chargers. This is all according to the New York Times playoff machine. 71% chance right now to make it, 40% to win the division, 31% for wild card. Division may be the better path. If they win out right now, they have a greater than 99% chance to make it. There's like one scenario where like someone's saying like 16 games have to go like a certain way for them to get the nod to get kicked out at 11-6. Some important games for this weekend. Matt, I know you came out with a great tweet detailing all the matchups. I just focused on a few of them. Steelers versus Bengals. Obviously, the Steelers, you want Bills fans in that one. Cowboys versus Dolphins, you want the Cowboys. Texans versus Browns, there's like some back and forth with that match.
Complicated.
Yeah.
Very complicated. I first came out with the Texans because the idea that or the Browns to win, because the Browns are a game up already. So if you sit there and think that they're going to get to 11 wins somehow, like, you give them a spot, right? So, like, at least, like, knock out the Texans. That was my thinking originally. But, you know, Joe B. and Elena Getzenberg explained, and rightfully so, that if the Texans beat the Browns, that puts them all in the same pot. And then in Week 18, the Browns play the
Bengals,
and the Colts play the Texans. So the idea is their teams are going to be knocking each other out there at the end. But I think that the big point about all this, and not to, you know, railroad your segment here, Bills just have to win. 99% chance that they make the playoffs, they win out. I think, listen, if you can't beat the Chargers and the Patriots at home the next 2 weeks, given the circumstances around those organizations, you don't deserve to get in the playoffs anyway. But, man, I know you said 41% to win the division. To me, it feels higher than that. Like, the Cowboys are pissed off, and they're going on the road to the Miami Dolphins, who have issues on their offensive line. Tyreek Hill is a kind of this – even if he plays, he's not going to be 100%. Those high ankle sprains last for weeks. And to me, if I'm the Dolphins, and they don't really have this luxury because of the schedule, and listen, if they lose out, there's a scenario where the Dolphins don't even make the playoffs. So they have to be a little bit aggressive. But, man, if you play Tyreek Hill against the Cowboys and he re-injures that ankle and misses the season, their season's over. So that's something that I'm watching very closely. And if the Dolphins lose this week, man, does that – ratchet things up really in a big way over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's gonna be pretty incredible. One more game, Colts versus Falcons for you guys, Bills fans. Obviously, you want the Falcons in that one. But yeah, the Texans Browns game is interesting because I still am your original thought. Like, I still think I think I want the Browns just in case. Mathematically, if the Bills were to drop a game and go to 10-7, if the Browns are able to win, it gives the Bills like a coin flip chance to make it if other games go their way. But like you said, if the Texans do win, then the Bills can get in at 11-6, no matter what the case may be. So that's kind of where you kind of, if you want to go with the there's that like one opportunity if they win out here with like, there's like 16 games have to go the right way, but to guarantee it, the Texans win, if the Bills win out, they're guaranteed to make it 11-6. So if the Bills control their own destiny, like Matt said, and go 11-6, that's kind of the path right now. Do you think there's any really path? I've looked at it several times. I've been going through it. Do you think there's any really path for them? I know they're going to have to get really lucky, but 10-7, you, like you said, you just don't think that they can.
It's going to be hard, but listen, all these teams in the mix are terrible. Like, yeah. They're not terrible, but like,
yeah,
they're not elite teams. Even the Browns, for as good as they've played, I mean, they rely on that defense and they just keep games close and they don't make mistakes, which credit to them. But they're not some great team that, like, you know, isn't capable of a couple losses in a row. Like, even the Colts, for as well as they're playing, like, what's going on with that team right now? They're kicking guys off.
They're 20th in DVOA.
Yeah, so it's like they've been a benefactor of a pretty easy schedule. So I think if you want to sell me a plan that like four of these teams end up at 9 wins, I'd believe it. Like, none of them are above tanking the end of the season, I guess is my point.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I think there's a lot of teams like the New York Giants of the NFC last year. I feel like that's like what the Colts are. They're just like that team that, you know, they won a lot of games that were easy on their schedule, and they're able to maybe hopefully sneak in here at the end of it. But let's move to this Bills versus Chargers preview. The Chargers are a mess right now, Matt, coming off of one of the most embarrassing losses of the season, a 63-21 loss on Thursday Night Football. Easton Stick now at quarterback with Justin Herbert out for the season. Keenan Allen, do not practice 2 days of practice, the first 2 days of practice this week. What would that mean for this matchup if Keenan Allen can't go?
It's not good. And I really don't think that they're going to, you know, if he's dealing with a heel injury, that this has been something that extends beyond this week. Like, what's the push for the organization to play him? I feel like they're probably going in a different direction next year anyway. And you have a young player in Quentin Johnston who, you know, with Palmer back and, you know, that wide receiver room with a ton of young guys, like, why not just play those guys and see what it looks like as you kind of continue the evaluation on them down the stretch? I have a very sneaking suspicion that Allen doesn't play. Even if he does play, I think that Easton Stick is in the worst possible situation for his second career start. You don't want to go against Sean McDermott in this spot. You just don't, because he shuts down quarterbacks within their first 8 starts of the NFL, even high draft picks. I mean, you have the high draft picks over the years, like the Sam Darnolds, the Tuas, all those kind of things that are thrown in there. Even the Justin Herbert, who I think struggled a bit in his first game against McDermott. But think about some of those like lower round draft picks and undrafted guys. The one that comes to mind for me is Duck Hodges a couple of years ago, who got absolutely embarrassed. Do you remember Duck Hodges mania that was taking over the NFL world? And he goes, and I think he threw 4 picks against the Bills that day, 4 or 5 picks. So it's going to be a game for Easton Stick that they're going to throw a lot of confusing stuff at him. I really like what I saw last game out of Cam Lewis. I think Cam Lewis has played well enough this season in the spots that he's been given. It's a small sample size to be a real viable candidate to be the team's free safety next season if they move on from Micah Hyde. And obviously, I always tell people on my show I'm very biased about Cam Lewis because he went to the University of Buffalo. But he's played really well. And I think that he's a guy that's been in the system for a long time. He knows multiple positions. When you know multiple positions, you can think in a way on the field for other positions. And I think that helps you understand your responsibilities and how to communicate with people playing at different spots. He's played boundary. He's played slot. They still ask him to play slot sometimes. He sometimes acts as a hybrid linebacker in some of these sets. So he's a really versatile piece. And I think that whole group is going to put Easton Stick in a world of confusion on Saturday.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see like a 3rd-and-long situation on Saturday. If they can get Hyde back, maybe a Cam Lewis. Because I agree with you. I think Cam Lewis, when he's played this year, fearless, great tackler. I thought he had a great pass breakup in the win on Sunday. On Sunday over the Cowboys. I would love to see some dime looks with Cam Lewis and Micah Hyde back there with Jordan Poyer at the hybrid linebacker spot, just so Jordan Poyer can play closer to the line of scrimmage. I think at this point in his career, that's where he's excelling more at that spot. Again, he's still a good safety. He made a great play actually downfield on CeeDee Lamb, laid the boom, could have came down with the interception. But again, the dime looks that they're able to do with these versatile pieces in the secondary, even a Teron Johnson, I know he's mainly slot, but he can do it all. He's good in the blitz. He can play man. He can do it all. So this defense has a lot of interchangeable pieces. And I think with Taylor Rapp, I thought he's had an okay year. I think Cam Lewis can really push for an opportunity there. Are you worried about the Chargers playing inspired against this Bills team with the new head coach and making it an effort? Or is this kind of like a situation where the trap games, because for me, it's out of my head just because I think that the Bills are playing. They found an identity on both sides of the ball and the Chargers are kind of reeling. They have a lot of older guys. So what's your thoughts on like the Chargers are going to play inspired and they have this new head coach and maybe they can pull something out, some crazy upset?
No, I don't see that at all. I think it's a situation where this is a Chargers team that is probably just going to play out the season. When you lose that way to a bad football team, and that's what the Raiders have been this year. I mean, they're not a good football team. They got a quarterback that, you know, Aiden O'Connell, who's been barely serviceable for most of his time as in that role. And you let them go off for 63 points. You make mistakes offensively. And I know it was Stick's first start, but just some silly stuff. I don't see a scenario where the Bills go on the road. But again, this has been a team that, you know, has had some like what the heck moments this season. So never going to rule it out completely, but I just feel like this is a spot where the Bills go on the road and put a lot of pressure on them.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This Chargers team.
All right, Khalil Mack, one of the best edge rushers in this game, probably to neutralize them, kind of maybe something they did with Micah Parsons to kind of neutralize him. One, they kind of just ran the ball a lot, so that's something that the Bills could do to stop Khalil Mack from making an impact on this game. And this Bills offensive line, again, like we talked about earlier in the show, is playing continuous and doing a lot of really good things for this team. The Bills, fourth in yards per game going into this one at 376.9, sixth in points per game, 27.1. The Chargers coming into this game on offense, 17th in points per game at 21.7 and 15th in yards per game. So they've been an average offense all year. The Bills, obviously.
And that was with Justin Herbert.
That was with Justin Herbert, yeah. Defensively, the Bills are 12th in yards per game allowed with 312.9 and then fourth in points per game allowed. So they're giving up a little more yards. They're outside of the top 10, but still top five in points per game allowed. The Chargers, different story. They're a bottom feeder defense this year. 29th in yards per game allowed, 28th in points per game allowed at 24.6. And then something where they really struggle. They're okay against the run. They're an average middle of the pack team, but against the pass, they're 30th allowed in pass yards per game. So is this a Josh Allen game where he can spread the wealth to Gabe Davis, Dalton Kincaid, Khalil Shakir, Stephon Diggs, James Cook, et cetera, and really put a thumping in the air? Do you think this is going to be a balanced attack, or do you think it's just going to be, like you said earlier, a matchup-based thing, ebbs and flows, and the Bills are going to be able to do both in a balanced approach?
I'm very interested to see what they do with Kincaid because he's been in the red this week. If this isn't a spot where they look to maybe rest him a little bit, let that shoulder heal up. I'm not predicting that he won't play, but he played last week. He finished the game. He's been practicing in a limited capacity, but I don't know. That's just something I'm kind of thinking about. Like, is this a game where you can be a little bit, Quentin Morris, when he's played this year, I think he's been solid. So I'll be interested to see the personnel uses. I mean, if he can go, they're going to play him. So I think he probably does end up playing Kincaid. I think you spread the ball around. I think this could be a game to get right for Stephon Diggs. And I say get right in the sense of like go over 100 yards for the first time since week six. I think that their corners leave a lot to be desired. They're getting some pressure, but I think if you have a plan for Khalil Mack, they've done a really good job neutralizing teams' top pass rush option. So if he's not successful in this game, I don't see a scenario where this defense has a way to slow down this offense, knowing what they did to a Cowboys defense that was playing pretty well going into last week.
Yeah, it started with Max Crosby back in week two when they were able to. That was kind of like Spencer Brown's first test, I thought, as a guy coming off that back injury, and he really excelled, and they were able to neutralize Max Crosby, and they've been able to do that the rest of the year, like you said. But let's go to the keys of the game. I want to give you the key to the game on offense, and I'll start with that, and then I'll give the key to the game on defense for this matchup.
Oh, okay. For me, the key to the game is on offense is not turning the ball over. I know that's kind of lame and cliche, but like those are the kinds of things in this scenario. Like you have to go out and you have to be perfect on the first two drives of the game. And of course you script the first drive, and then the second drive, you'll probably be reacting to how they're playing you, but you have to get points on those two drives. Cause I think like if you go on the road and you give them very little hope with the way that you come out and you start, that's what changes. And then you don't make a mistake over the course of the game. It puts you in a position to win. I know Bills fans are hoping and some are expecting them to go on the road and just smash the Chargers. Like I picked them to win by three touchdowns. But like, you never know. It's the NFL. Anything can happen. You mentioned it a couple minutes ago about, like, you know, just galvanizing behind a new coach and all this kind of stuff. Maybe they all couldn't stand Staley and everybody comes out and they're all ready to go and their defense has their best effort of the season. But if you don't turn the ball over, even if that happens, I think that that gives you a chance to win. So that's the key to the game for offense.
Yeah, defensively, I'm going to go off what you said earlier. Just giving Easton Stick different looks and forcing him to make his second read, getting off his first read. You don't just want him to get rid of the ball quick. You want to allow that pass rush, who, again, I think the defensive lines, again, they kind of had a lull in the middle of the season, but, again, I think they're picking it up here late. This defensive line has an opportunity here to attack Easton Stick. The Chargers have allowed 34 sacks this year, so they're a team that's been struggling in that department. Prediction, Matt. What's your prediction for this game? I know you just kind of said it, but I just want an exact score, and then I'll give mine.
The exact score is 41-10 Bills. I had to look it up because I had it written down. I send it into the BKL crew every week, and I didn't want to give the wrong score. So there you go. I think it's going to be a fireworks show for the Buffalo Bills out in L.A.
Yeah, I'm going to go Bills 35, Chargers 14. This is the first time I'm picking the Bills in 2 weeks. In 2 weeks. I picked them to lose to the Chiefs, lose to the Cowboys. So maybe that's a bad sign and the Bills lose a shocker. But I'm going to go with the Bills in this one in a big victory over the Chargers. Matt, before you go, again, I appreciate you coming on. For all those who are listening, I greatly, greatly appreciate it. You're probably listening to this Thursday night, Thursday afternoon, on the weekend. I thank all the listeners that have been loyal and been listening to this podcast, Ages Analysis, week in, week out here in the past month. So, again, I greatly appreciate it. Matt, before you go, the new Winglots location opened up. Give me your thoughts.
Oh, man, it's special, dude. First live event, December 30th. I hope to see the host of AJ's Analysis out at the event. Dude, so everybody knows I love Wingnuts Wings. Like, it's one of the big reasons why I was so keen on partnering with them, and we do our weekly shows there or our monthly shows there. But I had their chicken sandwich and their roast beef at the new location, 1402 Millersport Highway, the other night. Dude, changes the game, man. Like, it is going to be a restaurant that just absolutely blows your doors off. And I hope everybody comes out on December 30th. We're going to have a huge party the night before the Patriots game, do a live podcast hangout. And what's cool is they're open later. So, you know, the party can keep going. Like, Froth closes at 10 on weekends. I think we're going to be jamming all the way till midnight. So come on out, have a good time, have some beers, have some wings. I'm excited.
Yeah, I like Wingnuts. They're good. But the Wingnuts Mile, I will say, are elite. I think the Wingnuts Mile are elite. But I'm excited to try that picture you posted of that other food there. That looks I am very excited to give the other food a try because it did look delicious. Matt.
You don't have any French onion soup, AJ, okay? So don't get yourself your knickers in a bunch, okay? When you get there and you look at the menu and you can't order three helpings of French onion soup, okay, guy?
I love French onion soup. It's delicious.
Dude, you get charged up for some good French onion, dude. I remember when that came to the table, man, and you were like, let's go. French onion soup, baby.
Cheese, bread. There's nothing better. Great broth. It's the best soup in the game. Matt, thanks for coming on. Just let the people know where they can find you and what you got coming up.
Yeah, at Matt Perino on Twitter. I don't say X. I'm never going to say X, probably. I'm going to say Twitter until the day I die. That's where you can find everything. At Matt Perino.
And then he does his articles for Syracuse.com, New York Upstate. So check him out there. Again, thanks for coming on, Matt. And great show today. We talked Bills, Cowboys, talked about some Bills playoff chances, some injury updates from Matt himself. And then we looked at the Bills versus Chargers, and then he gave his thoughts on the wonderful Wingnuts. Go check that out. He will be there December 30th live show. Again, Bills Mafia, thanks for listening. And I will see you next week. I have a pretty, hopefully, I'm trying to set up my biggest guest yet. So I'm very excited. Not saying Matt's not a big guest, but this is going to be a big one.
Dude, okay, I've been mentoring you now for, what has it been, 4, 5, 6 years, 5 years? Podcasting 101. Don't preview the next week's guest by saying, with the current guest on the show, by saying, I'm going to have the biggest guest that I've ever had.
listen, that's not a arrogant way to say things here. There are much bigger guests than you can get. But for future reference, don't do that, because that's going to make guests feel horrible. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I did kind of word that wrong. But I am having hopefully a nice guest on next week. And again, Matt will be on the show moving forward, I'm sure, plenty of times, and I'll be asking him to come back as long as I'm doing this. So, Matt, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. And I will see everybody next week.